Hello and welcome to Irreverent Testimony, the political podcast from a left-wing perspective by and for millennial and Gen Xer types. Tonight is Thursday, January 28th, 2016, and we just watched yet another GDMF, whatever other expletives you want to put in front of it.
Not that shit again.
Republican debate. I'm Travis.
I'm Rachel.
I'm Dana.
And we got through another one of these, a Trumpless debate. You probably know the whole story behind that, so I'm not going to rehash it. He decided not to show up because he had a mad at Megyn Kelly and Roger Ailes and did his own thing, raise money for vets, supposedly maybe a couple miles away. So it was not Trump and the rest of the old crew. And as usual, Rachel took the notes.
I did. 10 pages this time, you guys. I promise I won't make you sit through all of them.
So I'm just going to kind of turn it over to Rachel and Dana here to get us started with the talk.
So, all right. So this was the last debate before the Iowa caucus, which is on Monday. They were in Iowa. Fox News did the debate. And Megyn Kelly, as Travis said, was one of the moderators. Her and Trump famously had a little spat at the first Republican debate. So he didn't show up. The other moderators were Brett Baer and Chris Wallace. And the first question they started with tonight was specifically about Trump. It went to Ted Cruz. And they said, Megyn Kelly addressed him and said, let's talk about the elephant in the room, which is Trump not being here.
Oh, I thought you were going to make a Mike Huckabee fat joke. I was going to say, that's very mean.
Chris Christie.
Very mean. Or Christie, yeah.
Yeah.
No fat shaming here on the show.
No, none of that. So he kind of pandered for a while and talked about Iowa hospitality and how they welcomed him into their homes and blah, blah, blah. It's gross. And then he said, in 2017, Iowa will not be a flyover state, but a fly-to state.
Right. President Cruz will spend a lot of time in Iowa, I'm totally sure.
Yeah, because it matters the most. It has a high population and things that, no, probably not. But cute, yeah. You know, more pandering. And then
the people of Iowa have to be really sick of that. I think they hear it every election. They are super important for about 2 months out of every year.
Yeah, but they love it. They eat it up. This is why they refuse to not be first in the nation.
Right.
Yeah, it's an identity thing for them. But yeah, I mean, it is interesting to me, to Dana's point, that like then they're completely forgotten about for the other.
Well, right. You know, in the grand scheme of things, we talk about Iowa for a year and a half and they're only responsible for, you know, 1% of the delegates.
Yeah. I mean, it's ridiculous.
Yeah. But there we go.
So then he kind of hit Trump and he said, like, look, everybody up here is stupid, fat, ugly, and Ben Carson's a bad surgeon. So now that we've got the Donald Trump portion of the debate out of the way, we should talk about the issues.
Yeah, cute zinger opener, I guess.
Yeah. And then it was weird. I think it was Brett Baer asked him, so, you know, you spent the first part of this campaign really like on the same team as Donald Trump. And when he started to criticize you is when you started to become critical of him. And he went from saying the ugly, fat, stupid stuff to saying, oh, no, I love Donald Trump. I'm so glad he's running. And he's created tremendous enthusiasm.
He played
in our
both sides within the
so
same soundbite.
Totally,
yes. Amazing.
Like, literally within 30 seconds, he's all over the place. So that was interesting. You know, just basic nonsense from that. They asked Rubio, you know, he's said that he's going to unite the GOP. How's he going to do that? Considering, you know, there's all these different sort of caucuses from like the Liberty Caucus, which is kind of Rand Paul's thing, to the Tea Partiers, to the more establishment, to the moderates. How are you going to unite them?
And he just said, Obama's terrible and I hate him the most.
Yep. He destroyed everything that makes America special.
Ooh.
Which is okay. Clinton can't win because she wants Obama to be on the Supreme Court.
Yeah, he went to that hole twice, which I guess that's a fine soundbite. It's never going to happen in a million years.
No.
Yeah, I think he went to that hole like 3 or 4 times and other people kind of jumped on the bandwagon.
Yeah, it's a fine soundbite for our GOP Iowa debate.
Yeah, for the GOP group, I think it's a fine thing. I mean, it's been in the news a little bit lately because it just happened that she
well,
was
Obama's
going
to have to like come out tomorrow and be like, no, I'm not. Well, I'm not going to be on the Supreme Court.
He's actually on 2 separate occasions been asked by larger news organizations. I think one was Newsweek and one was People. I mean, like, magazines.
Mm-hmm.
If he'd ever be interested in that because of his background as a constitutional law professor. And he said, no, that sounds miserable. I would never want to do that. Like, I like to get into the thick of things. I could never be stuck in an office writing opinions. Yeah. That's just not my style.
Plus, he'd never get confirmed in a million years.
No, certainly not.
He said
but...
that it was too monastic for him and that he specifically didn't clerk for the court after law school because he didn't want to be stuck in a room writing opinions.
The only president that was also a Supreme Court justice, just a bit of trivia, was Taft, I think.
Is that true?
Yeah.
Oh.
I'm pretty sure Taft. And I think, I'm not sure if, I think Taft was a justice first. I mean, there's technically no reason why you couldn't.
Yeah, it's not illegal.
No, he couldn't have been because they get lifetime appointments. So
yeah, he could have given one up to run it for the presidency.
I don't know. I wasn't around in 1910. Someone will have to correct me on that. But I'm pretty sure Taft did both, and the only guy in history who did both. Obama's not going to do both. So it's not a big, dumb distraction. Obama will have to say, like, tomorrow or next week, no, I'm not going to be on the Supreme Court.
Well, and Rubio kept saying, like, he can't because he constantly just, as an executive, violates the Constitution here and there and everywhere. Like, he's, you know... He's violating it. He can't be a person that is the thing. And you're like, I don't.
That's not a waste of time talking about it. Obama's not going to be on the Supreme Court.
Yeah.
No. And it's a really big GOP talking point to say that, Obama doesn't uphold the Constitution and not just uphold it, but that he destroys it left and right. But when asked for a specific example, it never really works.
Well, they just
out
go to the
favor.
Executive orders, which
right.
every president does. But.
Which is perfectly within his constitutional right.
Yes.
So I think the next thing I thought was actually really interesting. They asked Jeb Bush next a question, and he pivoted and basically said, well, the question was about splitting the vote. Because there are so many Republicans left in the primary at this point, the question was basically, because there's so many, are we splitting the vote, allowing Trump to get the nomination? Which I thought was an interesting way to phrase it from Fox News. I think they're really showing their dislike of Trump with questions like that, not to mention...
Clearly.
Yeah. And he kind of had this really weird, like, trying to be funny and snarky response about how he views Donald Trump as a teddy bear and he really misses the guy and they had such a warm relationship. And it was supposed to be sarcastic, but he doesn't really know how to do sarcasm, I don't think. So it just came off as like, gross, what are you saying? Like,
yeah.
What? And then said, like, look, if I'm establishment, yeah, my dad was the president. Yeah, my brother was the president. Yeah, my mom's Babs. Like, I guess I'll take that. But I don't think that disqualifies me. And in fact, I think that, like, my record speaks for itself.
Not this year, Jeb.
Yeah, exactly. And he's like, and, you know, one of my big things is transparency. Like, I've released these thousands and thousands of pages of emails. And then he hit Clinton. And he's like, in order to get Hillary Clinton to do that, you have to have a warrant. And a
actually,
subpoena
Jeb has
and
not released all his emails.
Of course he hasn't. But, like, it's just a weird, it was just a weird answer. I mean, I thought the question was totally valid, which is, like, where are, you know.
Well, they all had their talking points well prepared, and they were going to use them no matter what the context of the question was.
Which they did all night.
And just, you know, I totally understand why Trump skipped this debate, because these moderators for Fox actually asked the tough questions.
Yeah,
God,
we got to give Fox some
debate.
Credit tonight.
Yeah.
To be honest, like...
It wasn't just Megyn Kelly. They all asked tough questions. Her the toughest.
Not just the questions, but, you know, there were so many times that people were called out on their record and said that you mm-hmm. flip-flopped on something that it started to get tedious. When people said, like, that's not exactly what I said,
right.
That they actually started pulling out almost like Daily Show style film rolls of when people were saying.
Yeah, they only did that twice. I wish they would have done that to everybody, but they only did it to Cruz and Rubio.
Yeah,
I agree.
And we'll
but
get
it was
to
great.
That, but
like,
yeah.
It was like they predicted how frustrating it would be to hear people walk back their records.
I don't think
they
I've
were
ever
like,
seen
Let's
that
just...
in a debate before.
No,
where,
no.
Where
I've never
where
seen
they
that
roll
before.
Film?
No.
Is that what they meant when they said, we're going to show you something you've never seen before?
I think so.
Absolutely.
Is we're going to actually call them out on their records with taped.
You're going to watch them say the thing they're about to say they didn't say.
Brett Baird into a striptease, so I assume that's what they're talking about.
We've all seen that before. What do you mean?
Well. And yeah, we'll get to that point. But it was really interesting. To Fox News' credit, a sentence I never thought would come out of my mouth, all three of them really hit hard and didn't go light on follow-ups, like, hey, you didn't answer that question, or no, that's not what you said, or actually, that's not factually accurate. Or
so
I mean, they really
Trump
were...
to duck out of this.
Yeah, right? So I have to say that I was pleasantly surprised. Megyn Kelly in particular I thought was the hardest hitter among the bunch. So next it was just – they were sort of talking about the kind of theme of the first part of it was whether it's better to be principled or whether it's better to be someone who can compromise. Whether it's better to be establishment or grassroots, they sort of were trying to make these delineations about – the kind of two sides of the Republican Party. And they asked Chris Christie that kind of specifically, and he said, you know, I don't think it's mutually exclusive. I think you can be principled, but I think there also are pragmatic things that need to be done and to get done. And, you know, you're going to have to compromise, which, you know, is true, but not doesn't solve the problem of the split in the Republican Party between I will never compromise on anything because this is my principle, mm-hmm. and I will never get anything done, you know, so...
Well, right. It's become the fundamental issue is any governance itself is the enemy. So,
right.
You know, just don't raise the debt ceiling. Let the United States full faith and credit default and, you know, shut the government down if we don't get our way over whatever. And
yeah.
So I don't think that's what people wanted to hear.
Well, and I actually thought that that was, with Christie, that's absolutely the right answer. So good for him, but it's kind of the no-brainer answer.
Mm-hmm.
But I thought that question specifically kind of was a secret dig at the Democratic debates or the Democratic caucuses, because there's been so much in the news about whether or not, you know, the soul of the Democratic Party lies in the head or the heart.
Yeah.
Because, and so for them to kind of steal that.
I guess, but that thematic... I think that's too subtle for, you know, GOP primary voters to grasp.
Sure. Yeah. I just thought it was smart on their end to say, you know, we're deciding whether this is hard or head. So if it does end up being somebody who is, you know, hard on the GOP side and we end up with Hillary Clinton or vice versa, with, you know, someone who's head on the GOP side and Bernie, it kind of solidifies that debate even further and solidifies their narrative about what the war for the American soul is.
Yeah,
I agree. The next question I thought was really interesting. So they brought up the idea that Ted Cruz aired an ad basically trying to get the Liberty Caucus is what they were calling it, which is the Ron Paul
libertarian types.
Yeah. And apparently Ted Cruz put an ad out that said that basically he was the heir to Ron Paul, the senior Paul, his legacy, because that he was sort of the most, the person that best identified those values, and kind of accusing Rand Paul of running away from his father's record,
mm-hmm.
and not using his support. And then this week, of course, Ron Paul's going to come out and campaign for Rand Paul. And so they asked Rand Paul, was that a mistake? Should you have run closer to your dad's record? Like, how do you feel about that? And he kind of gave a like, I love my dad, I respect him, and I never ran away from him, and I would never say anything bad about him, and, you know, he's great.
Well, of course not, because he has his old donor list.
Right. Well, and the interesting thing about this question is I don't think that the apple really fell that far from the tree between the Pauls. There's certainly some significant differences.
Yeah, but Rand has done a little more pandering.
Certainly.
I think that's
and
true.
He held a more senior leadership position in the Senate when he was there. He was certainly more the face of things, and he didn't have a lot of Boulderites running around screaming, you know, Rand Paul 2012.
Yeah.
Well, I think for me, Ron Paul comes at it from, like, an authentic place, and Rand Paul comes at it from
a little more Weasley.
A little more like, I'm going to ride the coattails, but try to be my own man. But really what I'm doing is I'm running on the Paul ticket.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that's kind of where this question was leading. So in his answer to that, he hit Ted Cruz for two things. One was the... audit of the Fed. Apparently there was a bill up for vote that Ted Cruz didn't show up for that was sort of auditing the Fed, which is the financial institution that Rand Paul hates.
No one is.
The NSA, and that Cruz was quoted as saying he wants the NSA to gather 100% of our cell phone data.
And that
Rand Paul was sort of saying, like, that's a violation of our liberty and
Christie,
that kind of stuff.
The Christie Paul cat fight didn't happen.
No, it did not.
I was looking forward to that.
Yeah.
Before we move on, I just want to say that, you know, it was kind of refreshing to have Rand Paul back up on the adult stage.
For a while, until he went off the rails with the abortion stuff, but we'll get to that.
Yeah.
But mostly it was a breath of fresh air. Yeah.
For the most part, he's the adult up there.
Yeah.
And there's probably about 40% of what he says that I can totally 100% get behind.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. That's the scary thing about libertarians, is that they are fiscally conservative, but socially liberal.
And they manage to woo some people who don't pay attention to everything, just the sound bites they like, and call themselves libertarian. And then if they actually find out about their views on gay rights and reproductive rights, then, you know, then they're kind of horrified.
Right.
Well, this is the thing I thought was so interesting, was that Rand Paul later we'll get to, pandered about reproductive rights in a way that Ron Paul never did. I mean, Ron Paul was maybe a little bit, but he didn't go as far as Rand Paul did.
Well,
I mean,
Ron Paul was crazy with the railing against the homosexual Illuminati.
Sure, agenda. But he was pro-life. I'm sorry, pro-choice.
He was pro-choice.
Ish.
I mean, more than any other Republican.
Well,
more than anybody else.
More than anybody on that stage, that's for sure. And Rand has kind of gone the other direction, said there's no way I'll get elected. I'll be able to viably run for president unless I'm hard pro-life.
Well, and I feel like that's pandering.
Of course it's pandering. I mean, he could have totally different views from his dad, I suppose. But, you know, most libertarians are not, if they are actual libertarians, you know, are not really too worried about that. They might find some weird nuances in the Roe v. Wade decision that doesn't jibe with the Constitution somehow, but really...
But Roe v. Wade's about privacy, and most libertarians respect privacy and personal autonomy, and
sure.
So most of them are pro-choice.
Yeah.
Unfortunately, if you're going to run for president as a Liberty Caucus and or libertarian, you can't win the primary if you're not pro-life. So
right.
Rand Paul went all the way there, which we'll get to again later. Mm-hmm. Blah-blah bullshit from Kasich.
I think there was a significant chunk of this that was devoted to ISIS, I'd say about 20 or 30 minutes.
We pivoted to ISIS from all kinds of topics.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
The price
yeah.
of ice cream to the price of beans.
Oh my gosh. So what we were thinking is we're going to kind of not hit too hard because we only have hopefully like an hour to do this.
Yeah.
And the ISIS stuff is the same shit you've heard every time. We've talked about it for 8 podcasts. We've talked about it. It's the same things over and over. So
yeah.
We'll talk about when they pivot, but I think in terms of getting the nitty gritty about what they're going to do about ISIS, it's not different
than the last podcast
we heard.
My dig on the moderators is they tried to cram too much in. They did ask some tough questions, but every time it looked like we were going to get into a good discussion with all these guys about reproductive rights or Planned Parenthood or
gays.
Mm-hmm. This was by design, I'm sure. They very, very quickly moved away after somebody gave a 30-second
commercial
soundbite.
Break even. They were just like, nope, never mind, commercial break.
We'll get to that, but somebody started talking about Ferguson.
Yeah.
And they were like,
matter.
We got to cut.
Yeah, cut.
Get out of here. Yeah.
So, yeah, just the general idea being there's not much that's not ISIS's fault. There are many times that people were asked questions where they blamed whatever they were being asked
Yeah, there
on
were
ISIS.
Even some weird connections, too.
Some very
taxes
weird
taxes on ISIS.
Yeah, some of the really fun ones we'll bring up, but in general, we're going to skip the entire,
ISIS
who wants
taxes.
To bomb Syria the hardest, and who's for carpet bombing versus who's for strategic carpet bombing versus, just screw that, they want to kill everybody brown.
Yep.
So that's the moral.
Yeah,
nothing's changed.
What Ted Cruz and some of the others hope you don't understand is that Ted Cruz would like to picture it as ISIS is kind of just running around in this huge swath of land where it's just crazy. ISIS people, you know, running around shooting guns in the air, when it's really ISIS is controlling huge swaths of territory where civilians are stuck and trapped.
Yes.
And that's why you have a Syrian refugee crisis.
And that's why we have targeted bombing and not carpet bombing.
Right.
Right.
And that's why you
can't just lay waste to a million people and hope you get a dozen or so ISIS fighters.
Right.
If
and
that's
he,
what Cruz actually wants to do,
well,
that would be horrific.
He even said at one point, like, I say carpet bombing not because it's tough talk, but because it's actually a fundamental difference in military strategy between me and President Obama. And we looked at each other and just said, yeah, he wants to do targeted bombing and you want to carpet bomb. Sorry, my cats are being cool.
Feline shenanigans, sorry.
So they asked Carson, literally, like, you have literally no experience in government at all. What are you doing? And he was like, well, I'll gladly admit that I'm the only person on stage who has no political title. What I'm going to do is tell the truth. And I get 2 a.m. phone calls all the time.
Where I make life and death decisions.
Life and death decisions. And I put together teams of smart people who think about things. So that's why he should be the president.
Yeah.
You know, what's sad is that was probably the most coherent answer I've ever heard to a debate question from him.
From him, yeah. Oh my God, I was like, "That's a sentence."
Those are real, honest to God sentences.
There were a couple times Carson got questions where it literally looked like he was dozing off or thinking about Star Wars.
Oh my God,
the
YouTube question, he was
laundry.
Like, "I'm sorry, I wasn't listening." Why? What was the question? Oh my God.
The YouTube question for him, we'll get to it, I'm sure.
We will.
Just because it's topical, there were some YouTube questions because it was Fox and Google debate. They didn't say who the question was for before the question was asked.
No, no, yeah.
And the question just went up on the big
monitor, had to
and
be
so
prepared
everyone was listening, and then they said, and Ben Carson, that one's for you, and he just looked around like, oh,
wait,
seriously?
What's for me? What is happening? I wasn't thinking that was going to happen.
I was on Alpha Centauri.
I was riding a unicorn through a valley of rainbows, and I wasn't listening to that question from that black lady.
But his answer wasn't really terribly that bad. He must have had...
No, it was. We'll get to it.
It
was really bad.
It didn't make any sense.
It was really bad.
It was gobbledygook word salad.
So next is they decided to pivot to specific policy issues. And, of course, the first one's terrorism. So we're going to gloss over
first
this
one,
because
last
it's...
last one's terrorism, middle
everything
terrorism.
Is fucking terrorism, and it's all ISIS all the time.
That's really the only problem in the country is ISIS.
Yeah.
You're finding out from us that we're all going to die from ISIS, then it's far too late for you.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah. So... Cruz and Rubio had a little row about who's going to do the right thing, and Cruz was trying to hit Rubio on the Defense Authorization Act, which he didn't vote for, but then Rubio is sort of cutting Cruz on wanting to cut defense spending, and that he voted for the Rand Paul bill, which is the only defense authorization bill he's voted for, and blah, blah, blah. So they just sort of fought back and forth over their records. And then I thought, what was really interesting was Chris Christie said, basically, you know, it's easy for people who are in Congress to hide against parliamentarian procedures, but as governor, you don't get to do that. You have to make decisions. And I agreed with him on that. I thought that, you know, it's true. Like, they keep going, well, I put an amendment on this, but it was only because I wanted to poison pill it, and this other amendment was going to undo the thing that I voted for, and da-da-da-da-da. And Christie kind of came out and said, like, nah. Like, you can't hide behind parliamentarian procedures forever. Your record's your record. You should stand behind it, or you should defend it, or you should change your mind.
Well, it's funny coming from Christie, who now his tour de force is defunding Planned Parenthood.
Right?
Right.
And he supported Planned Parenthood.
It is hilarious coming from him because he has flip-flopped like nobody's business.
Yeah.
But he is not wrong in that the way that legislators run versus executives.
Governors, yeah.
Because governors can do it too.
When somebody from the Senate or the House runs, they always get to say, like, well, the reason I voted for that bill before I voted against it, that kind of thing is mm-hmm. always a constant.
Classic John Kerry style.
Yeah, exactly.
Uh-huh.
Sure.
Hillary Clinton, John Kerry, they have to face these things all the time. Governors do just have to face up and say, like, no, I did it. I saw the negative effects and changed my mind.
Yep.
And it's a little bit of a different tact.
Yeah, sort of. It's not exactly what Rick Snyder's doing, but we'll get to that.
Right.
Yeah, yeah. So then it was really interesting because the question that was posed to Christie when he was answering those questions was about Cruz and Rubio are sort of inexperienced and are they ready to be commander-in-chief? And Cruz had an issue. This goes back to everyone hates him. So the moderator, Chris Wallace, asked a question to Chris Christie about Cruz and Rubio.
Mm-hmm.
He didn't mention either of them in his answer. And Cruz picked a fight with Chris Wallace and said, I was mentioned. I need to talk. And like, he wouldn't let Chris Wallace finish. And Chris Wallace was like, not having it. He was mm-hmm. like, nope. He's like, sir, you do not get to respond to my question. You get to respond if one of your opponents brings you up in their response, which didn't happen. And they shut him the fuck down. That happened more than once.
And then he threatened to walk out, right?
Yeah,
that's when he threatened to walk out. Yeah.
Well, no, that's not when he threatened to walk out, but it's like two questions later. But yeah, I mean, he was really like, you know, they call Obama a petulant child, but looking at that sort of back and forth between him and Chris Wallace, you just went, you're not helping your image if people don't like you. Like, you look like an asshole.
Well,
stop.
In this, on the GOP side in this election, that may have been tactical.
Maybe.
It's all about
he just looks like a whiny baby, man baby, though.
He does. To us, sure. But to GOP voters, that could be to his advantage.
Well, I mean, it worked really well for Trump.
It did, but Cruz doesn't pull it off the same.
No, certainly not.
Cruz eventually.
He's not used to the privilege.
Cruz eventually did say, like, right. I'm being treated unfairly. I might just walk out of here. He tried to pull a Trump, and everybody booed.
They did, yeah.
Which was a dumb move, because
it
if
was.
They showed up to this and they're not across the town watching Trump, they're obviously not into those kind of gimmicks.
Right. And that is when he did say, like, if he sort of said, like, I just wanted to say every question, the last five questions has been, hey, Rubio, do you want to attack Cruz? Hey, Bush, do you want to attack Cruz? Hey, whoever, do you want to attack Cruz? And he's like, if you guys keep asking me questions about me, I might walk out. And then Rubio was asked the next question and he said, just for the record, I'm not leaving no matter what you ask me. I'm here to debate. And everyone was massive cheers.
Yeah, and then Cruz behaved himself.
Yeah,
he got back
in the line. But he looked like an asshole from the exchange between him and Chris Wallace.
Which, again, I think
his comment,
it's tactical. It's tactical. This is his chance to be the Trump in the room.
Right, but that kind of tactic doesn't look good on him.
No, you're right. He can't pull it off.
He's too...
Trump seems aloof. Rubio seems tactical and, like... Like, in a slimy
aggressive
way. Like.
Mm-hmm. But Cruz seems like slimy and kind of smug and kind of weak and kind of, like, I don't know, gross
yeah.
when he does it.
That
like,
shows
it
some true grit to say, wow, people are attacking me. I'm going to walk out. I mean,
jeez.
Well, I mean, I think, personally, I think they both look whiny, Cruz and Trump, when they pull these kind of things. But to people who look at that as a show of strength.
Right. It's part of Trump's persona, my take no crap persona, even though, you know, you can certainly look at it. In a general election, I think it's disastrous. But right now, it's serving him.
Right.
Yeah.
Yeah. Okay, so then there's a lot more talk about ISIS and, I mean, literally, like, we could talk
for
20
minutes.
Was
there literally anything new or newsworthy in the terms of ISIS that's worth talking
about?
That's
why I'm going to really skip it because I'm looking at my notes.
I'll say this. The moderators, at the very least, and CNN certainly doesn't do this, and the CNBC didn't, the moderators at least said, hey, you know, President Obama did have an authorization to use force on the table, and none of you guys support it.
Right.
Yeah.
And they try to say, well, it was more about Assad, not ISIS. It's like, well, the authority, the, you know, it's still there on the table, and just Congress refuses to take it up.
Now, one thing that I would say that was a little bit new but is very nuanced was when Jeb was talking about it. He said that he was critical of the other people for not authorizing the use of force.
Yeah, he did.
I don't think that's brand new. He said it was in a book that you could go buy for $2 on Amazon, so everyone could afford it.
Oh, my God. He did kept saying, like, it's affordable for everyone, and it's on Amazon, and it's $2.
It's probably used for 1 cent.
Yeah. So, regardless, I thought it was at least something new that was in the cycle to say, like, I, you know, as a warmonger, I did think it was crazy that my fellow colleagues voted against the use of force just because it was Barack Obama doing it.
Right.
And I thought that was...
he didn't exactly say that, but that's what he meant.
That's what he meant.
Yeah. All right.
And then they had a question to Christy about profiling, which I thought was really interesting, because Christy has been publicly against profiling. He lives in New Jersey. It's close to New York. There's a really big problem in that sort of area about profiling. And they were talking about the San Bernardino attacks and how the neighbors didn't report the two individuals who committed the San Bernardino attacks. And then Christy launched into this whole, like, it makes no sense. Common sense dictates they should have said something. They knew they were going to attack America. And Megyn Kelly came back in a way.
Corrected him.
She was like, that is not what happened. And he's like, yes, it is. And she's like, sir, that is not what happened. What they said they saw was people coming in and out, packages being delivered, and Muslim men talking. That is the definition of profiling, and they didn't report it to the police because they felt they'd be accused of profiling. And he stepped the fuck back, and he was like, well, yeah, it's true. I mean, I think we can have both, and we don't have to profile, but, like, it's not up to you to profile. If you know, use your common sense, contact the police.
Yeah.
They'll decide if something's going on,
if they're
not
profiling
you.
Or not. Which, you know...
It's actually kind of a pragmatic thing to say, right?
It is.
If you see something, say something. There's problems with it
because of the state of the police force that we know of. But you're right. If you are worried that there's something suspicious, let the authorities worry about the profiling part. Don't you worry
Like, it's not illegal to, as a citizen, call the police
because
you're a racist.
That's not a thing.
You can do that, and they'll either disregard you or they won't.
If there's Muslim guys moving stuff in and out of a house and you're worried about it and you call the cops and it turns out it was chia pets, it's not going to make the news if the cops just ask a few questions
or get a warrant. Chia pets. And people might look at you funny if they even know that you're the one that called the cops.
And I'm not suggesting to do this or not do this. I'm just playing out this hypothetical scenario.
Yes.
Yeah, no, I mean, it's the if you see something, say something policy and let the police sort it out. Nobody needs to be
profiling.
Worried. I actually had not heard this part of this story until this debate.
Yeah.
Which I still, I'm going to wait to fact check any of this. I'm just going to let the professionals do it tomorrow and read all about it tomorrow. Because there were so many things that just sounded incorrect.
Well, on this one, from what I remember reading, Megyn Kelly was more or less right.
Okay.
Yeah. And
they did come out in public and say that they were concerned that the public would judge them for being racist assholes.
I don't know about that.
I know that what they saw was nothing more than packages being delivered.
I heard that. I just hadn't heard the soundbite that they were afraid to go to the police because they were afraid of being accused of profiling.
Well, Fox News is going to spin that angle no matter what.
Can I just say really quick?
Because they want to profile everybody.
Everybody out there. Profiling, when we talk about it as a political issue, has absolutely nothing to do with private citizens being racist or calling the police or anything else. Profiling is a specific to law enforcement issue.
Right.
In which law enforcement officials pull people over or investigate people or do things
based on their race,
based on a race or an ethnicity or a. So it's not about, you know, I have these neighbors that seem to be kind of doing weird things and they're Muslim and I feel like a racist, so I don't want to call them. There's no law against that. You're not going to get in trouble. What the issue with profiling is that law enforcement officials unconstitutionally pull people over and investigate people based on not probable cause, but rather based on their ethnicity or their racial background or their religious background or their gender or whatever. So we're not talking about, you know, racism being against the law. We're talking about law enforcement using those metrics.
Yeah, so Christy answered correctly, even though he bullshitted the first part of the answer.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, absolutely.
I mean, the only time I ever heard anyone bring up the concept of profiling in the case of a private citizen is Eric Zimmerman and Trayvon Martin.
Yeah.
And that's literally the only time I've ever heard it brought up. And it was
murdered a young black kid.
And it was not brought up as part of what was wrong with what happened was that he profiled, because he's not in a place to profile.
Right, he's not in an official law enforcement position.
He shouldn't have been enforcing laws in the first place.
Right. Sidetracks you from the issue.
Yeah. Okay, so, boring. they talked about, in the news lately has been the charity organization Wounded Warriors.
Mm-hmm.
And how they've raised tens of millions of dollars, but it's recently come about that they have used about 50% of the funds for kind of bullshit, for travel expenses and conferences
fancy hotels and fancy things.
And there was a question about whether or not, you know, that should be policed by the federal government if you were the executive, or whether or not not.
Interesting question. And if it's just 50%, then that's actually a decent track record for most scare quote nonprofits. The whole nonprofit deal in this country is by and large a big scam in a lot of cases, unfortunately.
It can be,
More and more so.
Yeah,
it can be. But I think it's still something that we should be talking about as often as possible.
Sure.
So that if people are donating to charities that they understand where that money goes.
Most of the candidates didn't want to touch it, and for good reason.
Right.
Because you think about all the religious organizations and all the BS charities and all the BS super PACs. And
absolutely.
Well, and Our Lady of Perpetual Exemption.
Yeah, the John Oliver. Exactly. So the question was asked to Bush, and they said, do you think it's the role of the federal government to police these organizations? And
he said
yes. And then he said, but the biggest thing is to fix the VA, and the VA is the problem, and we have to do something about that.
And he subtly said that he wanted VA to go private, which...
Right. And he was against the sequester all of a sudden, because that's hurting vets now, and that's new.
That perked my antenna up. You're against the sequester. I thought conservatives loved that. Anything that lowers spending, even if it fucks the vets, who cares?
Well, we're fucking with the government, and its power and what it does and how it functions, and that's good, because we don't need all these things.
Right.
It makes perfect sense that Jeb would be all opposed to any of the sequester issues, because...
He's a big spender, yeah.
He's quite a bit of a big spender, and he's had two people in the presidential office that are in his family, and it would make sense on his end to say that it really jacks the executive up to go through the sequesters. What we need to do is work through these issues to make sure we don't hit these.
You gotta love quote-unquote fiscal conservatives who are gonna run, if Jeb was the nominee, who's gonna run to the poll and vote for Jeb over a Democrat because of spending and deficit.
Oh, yeah.
It's just they don't even look at the numbers. They just go with what popular culture
He's got an
demands.
Elephant on his lapel pin. That means that it's going to be fine.
Yeah.
He's not a big spender. Just like his brother, who didn't spend billions of dollars.
Any money.
All of them, except for maybe Rand Paul, but who knows.
All right. So this is one of my favorite parts of the whole debate. So this was a debate, like Dana said earlier, in partnership with Google. And Google now owns YouTube. And so they had, similar to the Democratic debates and I think one other Republican debate, YouTubers who have a pretty high follower count.
YouTube entrepreneurs.
YouTube entrepreneurs, they kept calling
that
them.
Use the YouTube.
Still no PewDiePie. Well, I guess he's Swedish, so.
So, I loved this. There was this black guy who lives in St. Louis near Ferguson who asked about...
to be fair, his background's important. He is a tech reviewer on YouTube. That's
and
what he's former, famous for.
And a former vet, veteran.
And yes. Former veteran and tech reviewer. That's
yes.
Current veteran. Yeah.
So he was asking about, you know, the kind of violence that happened in Ferguson, and it's sort of the epicenter, the beginning of Black Lives Matter. And he said, you know, I understand that body cameras can be helpful in this cause, but the cameras on our phones are much more effective than any body cameras that police and law enforcement have access to or that regularly use. How can we make technology work to better help law enforcement and communities of color and communities everywhere sort of get together? And the question was to Rand Paul, I'm sorry. And oh my God, I loved it. he said, you know, I went to Ferguson and I talked to people and, you know, some of the core issues. He didn't really address the tech issue or the body cameras, but he did talk about Black Lives Matter without saying Black Lives Matter. And he talked about how when he went there, he discovered that 30% of the public budget for the city came out of civil fines.
Mm-hmm.
And that was based on, and these are reports that I think anyone who follows the Black Lives Matter movement or Ferguson very closely already knows about. But for those of you who don't, there was kind of an expose done by the Department of Justice about these civil penalties. So this is when you get a parking ticket, or you get your car towed, or you get any kind of misdemeanor violation, but even not criminal, just, you know, non-moving traffic and jaywalking and stuff like that. And they have pretty high fines there,
and
particularly
high
for a population of people who are incredibly low income. And so they ticket a lot of people with pretty high ticket prices for a low-income population that can't always afford to pay them. And when you can't afford to pay them, what happens is then you go into this sort of cycle with the criminal justice system where they add on late fees and they add on court fees and they
add
on all these kind of things. And now you have a criminal record, and then now they've impounded your car. So you have no car, so then you lose your job. And in some cases, you can go to jail for not paying court fines and court costs and civil fines. And he really pointed out something that no one's talking about, and I would give him credit for. No one on the Democratic side of the ticket is talking about this either, that these communities of color and poor communities are really targeted in a way that is...
Well, they've talked about it on the other side, but not as specifically as Rand got into it.
Yeah. Right. And that, you know, he said, which I loved, he said, you know, if I got a ticket, or most of the people in this audience, and they're all white...
Well, probably
he knows what he said.
He said, if I got a ticket, or most of the people in this audience got a ticket for $100... It sucks, but you could pay it. For other people that live in these communities, they can't afford that. And sometimes they lose their cars and they lose their jobs, and it sets them into a cycle of economic disparity and depression, and they can't get out of it. And that's something that no one's really talked about. And I was just so heartened that in a national debate on a national stage on Fox News, he was willing to talk about that. So I thought that was really kind of wonderful.
And then Fox got the commercial real quick, so they wouldn't talk about it anymore.
No, yeah, exactly. Then he talked about the war on drugs white people and black people do drugs at about the same rate, but that three out of four people in jail for drug crimes are black.
African American.
Yeah.
And men. And that, you know, out of every 100 women in communities of, or 100 people, so let's see, in communities of color, for every 100 women, there are 60 men. Because the rest of them are in fucking jail or prison, mostly for drug crimes, mostly for low-level drug crimes, and that really the war on drugs is a race issue and it is an inequality issue. And I mean, he was talking like he was a Bernie Sanders liberal Democrat talking to Killer Mike. It was amazing. Not a lot of claps from the crowd.
Well, not a lot of his support there.
It's not like he was spinning numbers. I mean, these are just facts.
Sure, but you know, you white.
But hearing that at a Republican debate in Iowa
was
pretty
unlikely
tremendous.
Place to hear
especially
those
when.
Facts, but why I said it was great to have an adult back on the stage.
Yeah.
Like he will tell you.
As opposed to Chris Christie's, you know, when he's talking against profiling, he's also saying never say anything bad about the police and
right.
Obama
right.
Hate the
law
police.
Enforcement's
Blue Lives
everything.
Matter.
And, yeah. So that's actually interesting you bring up Christie, because the next question was to Chris Christie. And they asked him, you know, people always talk about how they're going to cut spending and they want to cut waste and they want to cut this and they want to cut that, but nothing really happens.
Everyone always says waste or fraud.
Waste or fraud, you know, red tape, all that stuff. Can you name one thing the federal government's currently doing that it should not be doing? And Chris Christie said, yeah, you want one? And he was like, yeah. And he's like, we should cut funding to Planned Parenthood.
Which from Christie is a fucking hoot.
It's not only is it a hoot, but yeah, that's what, $8 trillion or however much the,
I mean,
it's going to take to balance the budget.
Are we fucking kidding me right now? And they're like, okay, that's really small. Anything else? And
well,
he
specifically said, can I jump in on this? He was asked specifically, so, you know, that's a pretty small part of the budget. Is there anything bigger that you'd like to cut?
Yeah.
And he said, millions and millions of babies being butchered every year. Is there anything bigger? Which was met with riotous applause. And then the question moved on to somebody else.
Yeah. Yeah. And that was the first and last thing we heard about abortion, basically.
Not entirely,
he brought it up. There was one other question later. But, like, he brought it up and we were like, oh, my God, they're going to talk about reproductive rights.
Finally.
And then they were like, cut to commercial. They literally were like, nope, that's it.
That's it.
Well,
also, on Christie's campaign side, like, that's... From a fact-checking perspective, tomorrow...
That's a fact-checker's dream come true.
Tomorrow, that's going to be all over the headlines of... Chris Christie says now millions and millions of babies get murdered every year. Chris Christie? Really?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Anyway, on that note, we're going to take a quick break, and we'll be right back. Don't go nowhere.
Unnecessary sedation. Inside you're gonna feel you belong. Welcome to my nightmare. Yeah. Welcome to my breakdown.
Hello and welcome back to Irreverent Testimony. We are talking about the GOP debate, last one before the Iowa caucuses, which, by the way, we're going to be podcasting, and I'm actually going to try to see if we can get something going live on YouTube.
Yeah.
If I have the technological capability to do that, then
I will. I have some ideas about that, so we can talk about that later. But yeah, we'll definitely be covering the caucuses as they go.
In the meantime, back to debate stuff, Rach.
Yeah. So... the next question was one of my favorites. I said that a couple times, but it's true. Cruz was asked about sort of replacing and removing Obamacare and, like, what would he do about that? And it was really interesting because he basically described Obamacare.
90% of it was a description of Obamacare.
He's going to repeal Obamacare and replace it with
Obamacare
called Cruz Care.
Cruz Care. Apparently, it was... we all just sort of jaws agape watched him talk and we're like, that's Obamacare. That's Obamacare, you guys.
To be fair, there were a couple of things that he mentioned that were not Obamacare that were what the Democrats were fighting for that they couldn't get in Obamacare.
Yeah. And some things that like would be really catastrophic because I don't think he understands how the healthcare system works, which is not surprising. So he basically said, I want to expand competition, blah, blah, blah. And then he said there were three reforms he wanted to enact. One was rather than state exchanges, he'd like to see people be able to buy insurance across state lines, which if you remember back to 2008 and 2009, 2010, that's something that we fought for.
That was what the Democrats wanted.
The insurance companies didn't want it.
Correct. Like we wanted people to be able to buy
health insurance. It would be too big a hassle for them and it would drive the cost down too low.
them. In New Mexico, if it was cheaper there, I could buy it there. And Ted Cruz is like, we should do that. And I'm like, are you Bernie Sanders right now?
Well, I was going to say that that's Bernie Sanders. Is
closer to Hillary, actually.
Hillary. No, that's
close
right.
to Hillary care.
You're right.
So actually, we liked his ideas.
His ideas are great. We were like, great, let's do that.
Except
let's do that.
It obviously don't replace what we already have. Just if you want to add on these things, awesome.
Well, so what was really interesting? Go ahead.
Oh, he specifically said before he said he would have these three specific reforms. Mm-hmm. He said he would get rid of every single word of Obamacare, mm-hmm. and replace it with these three specific reforms. And for me, that was interesting because none of these three specific reforms are any of the things that everyone agrees upon now that Obamacare is in place.
Yeah,
that everyone agrees upon. So, you know, the things that everyone likes are stay on your parents' insurance till the age of 26, no pre-existing conditions
can get you kicked off.
Yeah. He didn't mention those.
He didn't mention those. He wants to repeal those, which everyone likes.
Which, can I just jump in for 1 second on that? My opinion about that is that he doesn't want to talk about those because those have been so widely spread as the positive things about Obamacare that I think that it's kind of too transparent. If he brings up 26 on your parents' insurance and pre-existing conditions, it sounds like he's talking about Obamacare.
Everyone knows those are provisions.
Yeah, if you know anything about Obamacare, everything he said is Obamacare. But if you don't know much and you just hate Obama, what he said was sort of like... okay.
You know, it's a step in the right direction because for a while it was just like no to any of this. Yeah. And let's just go back to
just
the old system.
Burn it down. Right. So then he said he wants to expand health savings programs, which Dean and I have a lot to say about. It's fucking bullshit. It doesn't work. It doesn't make any sense.
It does work for some people. I had an HSA and it was good. It worked out great for me, but that was just me in my particular situation. Like, it might not work for me next year.
Well, nothing terrible happened to you.
No,
the thing about the HSAs that I find disturbing is that it kind of flips the current insurance system around where you have a deductible that you have
right.
to meet.
If you can afford that deductible, it's great.
Yeah, yeah.
It's great. It's a big tax write-off at the end of the year, and then you pay nothing. But I happened to need a bunch of expensive tests early in the year, and I got that out of the way, and then it was clear sailing. And for me, who was making a decent income – and I was single and whatever, it was great. But for a lot of people, no.
Well, that's what my point was, you know, health savings accounts are great for people who can afford to put money into savings for healthcare.
Right.
For most people, no. I'm barely making ends meet. I'm barely able to pay my fucking bills and keep my water and my electricity on. How am I going to put a couple $100 a month into a health savings account that I might not use? And if I don't, it goes away at the end of the year.
Well, no, that's not true. It doesn't.
Well, flex spending. Right. But still, like, you know, even if it doesn't go away at the end of the year, how many people have a couple $100 to put toward health insurance?
Not the poor people.
Right. Well, the people that really don't have health insurance.
Right.
People we're trying to help. So it seems like a very non-functional plan for most people. Go ahead.
Yeah, my specific concerns about expanding health savings accounts is that it's going to flip the concept of the deductible on its ear. And we'll have, rather than, you know, you have $500 for a hospital visit, $25 for a doctor's visit,
copay,
that kind of thing.
Yeah.
It'll be the exact opposite, and it'll be you pay out of your savings account first, and then the insurance account will pay the balance once you've run out of things.
And sort of what
and
he
so
described
basically
was
you have
like,
to bankrupt somebody before your insurance kicks
yeah,
in.
He's
for most
like,
people, yeah.
Everyone should have catastrophic health insurance, and then everyone should have an HSA, a health savings account. And you're
HSA doesn't work for everybody.
It
doesn't work
for
way.
Most people, right?
No.
I mean, it works for middle class and upper class people. Well, upper class maybe not, don't even need it.
But only if you're anticipating a lot of expenses that you know you're going to get out of the way. And then, like, on a normal year, like, if you're healthy and a $3,000 deductible, I mean, that's a lot.
Right. It is a lot.
Well, the interesting thing about the health savings accounts, why people are drawn to them, is it's a strictly tax-based argument, which means that you get to put into that account prior to taxes being taken out versus when you have a deductible.
Right.
But when taxes are your least concern, say someone who makes less than 60, 70 per family per year.
Mm-hmm. Let's say they make $15,000 a year.
If you make $15,000 a year or you make less than 40 for a family, who gives a fuck.
Yeah.
You're getting
like,
all your taxes
you're getting
back
tax
anyway.
Rebates anyway.
Yeah.
It doesn't really matter what you spent on your health care was tax deductible.
It's
it
not realistic
matter.
To apply that to the whole population. It's ridiculous.
No, it is.
No, it's a rich person's like completely out of touch argument.
And most people don't even understand that because they're not going to have an opportunity to even enroll in an HSA.
No. Most people will never have this opportunity even offered to them or even explained to them.
I have to figure out how to put $6 of gas in my car so I can get to my job that's 20 minutes away today until I get paid tomorrow, where my entire paycheck is gone from rent and lights and energy, and then I got to go to the grocery store and my money's gone. I'm going to put $100 into a health savings account I might use later if I get... It doesn't make any sense for most people.
No.
No.
So that was ridiculous. And then the third thing that he proposed was really funny to me, which was he thinks that insurance should be linked to not employment, but to the individual, which is literally
Obamacare.
That's like one of the major tenets of Obamacare. Yeah. Is that regardless of the job that you have, you are still able to buy and have and access health insurance.
Oh, so you mean Obamacare.
Obamacare. He's like describing Obamacare and being like, I'm going to dismantle Obamacare and then I'm going to put it in place.
Cruise care.
Obamacare. But we're going to call it cruise control or something. I don't know. Like, it's crazy.
Cruise control.
I don't know. I'm sure, you know, Frank Luntz will come up with a cute term. But, you know, I mean, it was like listening to someone say, you know what I really hate about bananas is that they have skin on them and that they are shaped like a penis. What I would like to do is create a new fruit.
I'd really like that to be more dong-like.
Yellow,
more, like a peel
more
than a
dong-like,
skin.
And more like a peel that's thick but less like a skin. And you're like, that's the same fucking thing, dude. You just use different words, but that's the same fucking fruit. That's still a banana. A banana's a banana. Woo. Like, it was crazy. It was a crazy thing to listen to. And everyone kind of like, they didn't ask for follow-ups on this one. They all just went like, okay, moving on.
I think it gets a pass on this one because everyone's been asking the Republicans for a year and a half, what is your specific plan? What will you replace Obamacare with?
Oh, we got something. Don't worry. We got something.
And everyone's been saying, oh, don't worry. We got something.
The biggest thing is to repeal it, though. That's the most important thing.
His answer is, we'll repeal it and replace it with the same fucking thing. That's
literally like point by point.
What we want to do is rename it.
Right, right. Well, at least they're finally being honest about that, right?
Well, and it actually makes perfect sense because what Obamacare really is was the original Republican plan from the late 90s.
Yes, correct. When they were fighting Hillary on universal health care.
Yeah, exactly. Hillary
was
proposed.
So this was their compromise.
This is what the Republicans proposed.
Yes.
Like the individual mandate was their idea, and then they turn around and tried to make it unconstitutional based on the individual mandate.
Yeah, exactly.
Super bait and switch.
Yes, it's so... It's crazy making.
Classic bait and switch.
It's crazy making.
But anyway, Obamacare's not going anywhere.
No.
It'll hopefully just get improved upon.
Yeah, to Hillary's point, not to be a Hillary supporter, but
you know. We do love Bernie, but you know, we're not going to Medicare for all
next year. No,
it's just not gonna happen.
All right. Go ahead. This is a question that's not been asked at any debate in my recent memory, certainly not in this circuit. They asked Jeb, about statehood for Puerto Rico, which
like
I thought
was... Anybody cares outside of Puerto Rico?
I guess I do, a little bit.
I've always actually been kind of passionate about this one.
Okay, but GOP voters, how many of them
care? None.
Well,
none
and the way they framed the question was so fucking offensive. They were like, these people are poverty-stricken and we're going to bail them out now? And he's like, all right, well, no.
It was like statehood was a bailout.
Yeah. He's like, if I lived in Puerto Rico, I'd vote for statehood. And I was like, hallelujah, so would I, right?
So would they.
And he's like, of course we can't let them in until we, you know, sort of deal with the structural economic problems in the what do we call it? It's not a state. It's
their economy is in a nightmare right now.
Yeah,
we're not
allowed
to call it a colony anymore, but that's really what it is.
A protectorate?
Thing that doesn't get to vote but has to serve in the military. And anyway, I thought his answer was, you know, very establishment from 1996, which was like, yeah, Puerto Rico, I'd vote for statehood and like we should fix their economic problems. And they can't come, but they'd have to pay federal taxes and they'd have to do all the things. And, you know, they get the vote and da da da. You know, he then. But can I ask you, Travis, because you lived in Florida?
Yeah.
he spent a really good amount of time on this question talking about the $79 ticket to Orlando and the number of people who moved from Puerto Rico to Orlando, and he kept hitting Orlando. Like, can you explain what the fuck that's about?
Not really. I mean, I didn't live in Orlando. I lived in South Florida, and we did have some Puerto Rican refugees, but it was mostly Cuban and Haitian.
Is this something that is a thing, though? Like, they moved
I don't
to
know.
Orlando?
You'd have
or, like,
to ask people in Orlando. I haven't heard about it.
Like, I haven't either.
I think it's still the Caribbean and Central and South America.
Right.
That the issues with not so much
Puerto Rico.
But maybe the last few years, because the last few years it's gotten really, really bad economically.
So
this could be a new thing. Yeah. I left in 2008.
Right. So I just don't know, I guess.
There's any chance that I'd assume that, you know, Jeb probably understands this politically as the governor of the state. He probably has some talking points that makes him sound educated on the point.
Yeah.
But do you think there's any chance that he doesn't really understand the difference between Haitian, Cuban, and Puerto Rican?
No, he understands.
Definitely he understands full Florida, well. I think probably, but just the Orlando question for me was like...
Voters in Iowa may not know.
No, I was going to say, maybe not him not understanding, but him banking on no one else understanding.
Maybe.
Like, he can sound presidential or learned on the topic, but just spin.
And that reminds me, wasn't Cuba a big deal in normalizing relations with Cuba, a huge fiasco that they hated Obama for, and nobody's brought it up in any of these debates.
I think at one time, one question
like
was
the
asked
first or
about
second
it.
Debate?
Like, yeah, exactly. And no one's talked about it. And I think it's because polls.
It's become overwhelmingly popular.
You talk to my parents' generation and the generation below there, above them, I guess, like older people. They're completely against this. But everyone that's not like 60 or...
Well, the older Cuban expatriates from Miami, it's still a big deal for them.
Sure, but like in one like part of a state.
Well,
for most
a really
of the
important
country,
state, though.
True, but for most of the country, I think people are like...
Enough is enough.
It does seem kind of silly.
Yeah, Cuban Missile Crisis was 1962.
Like, that was a long time ago, and like that Fidel guy's not there anymore. And like,
he's there. he's not in power.
Not
his brother's in power.
Dictator, or whatever you want to call him. But yeah, I mean, I think that they sort of... made a really big deal about it when it happened, and then they looked at the polls and looked at people's response, and people's response was like very
well. That
meh,
hasn't
that
hasn't
makes
stopped
sense.
Them before. Look at the polls on gun control. Look at the polls on Planned Parenthood. Look on the polls on immigration.
I think it's a little different than that. I mean, even at my age, I'm 32, and I look at things like the Cold War, like everyone bringing up Putin all the time. Granted, he's made a lot of power grab moves, and things have gotten a little heated with him recently. But even the constant, like, we're at war with China, we're at war with Iran, we're at war with Russia.
Everybody's over it.
Iran makes sense. Libya. Syria, Libya, these things make sense because there are actual things happening. But when we start talking about Russia and China, these things seemed really super outdated to me. Like, just these are old gripes that when new leadership comes into power.
Yeah.
When people just don't have specific grudges against specific one another leaders.
It's different with
these
Castro being from South Florida. Yep. Growing up in South Florida, you know, Fidel Castro was right in line with Saddam Hussein in terms of
But he never had any
dictators.
Sort of grip of power, really.
Sure he did. Sure he did. And he had Russian, you know, ICBMs. But that was the 60s.
Well, yeah, that was the 60s. And that's entirely different. He was partnering with somebody who had power.
Yeah.
So I think that what we're trying to say is, like, from our generation's perspective, we did not do duck and cover. We did not live through – I mean, we were alive through some of the stuff with the Cold War, but really by the time we were of any kind of age of knowing anything, the Berlin Wall was down.
A little more
than
you guys.
Yeah, exactly. That's what I'm saying. Like, the Berlin Wall was down. The Cold War was basically over. And so we've lived an entire life of –
why are we fighting with these Cuba people again?
Of basically, nothing and then 9/11.
Yeah.
So for us, you know – this idea of Putin that I think, excuse me, really resonates with older populations, really anyone older than us, works. And for the millennials among us, we just go like, yeah, I mean, there was that really, like, we botched this thing with the Bay of Pigs, and then we really fucked up with, like, Fidel, and then we hate them, and yeah, there was the Cuban Missile Crisis, and, like, that's all in recent history, certainly, but we also feel
like... We all learned about it, but it's not...
Yeah, but
lives.
It's, like, not something I'm scared of. We never duck and covered, we never really worried about Russia, we really grew up in, like, we talked about, I think, on a previous podcast with Arliss and her cohorts, was, like, we came about in this time where there was this really specific small chunk where, like, it was kind of okay. And there was, like, some bombing of Kosovo and, like, you know, but, like, really, there wasn't anything really very scary. But it wasn't scary for us.
Well, Kosovo still had some leftover Cold War tenets because Milosevic was a communist.
It wasn't scary for me.
Yeah, but he was doing ethnic cleansing. That's why we were...
Yeah, I mean, it was horrible, obviously.
As a punk kid in the late 90s, though, we were pissed.
Of course we were. What I'm saying is the Cold War did not affect us in that way. We were not scared.
No,
we didn't grow up scared.
We were pissed off about the remnants.
We were mad.
Like, why are we bombing?
We were not scared of commies. No.
But we were not scared.
We were not scared of communism. We were confused about why our government insisted on bombing people who were innocent in some non-violent war. I'm thinking particularly Kosovo in the late 90s. Like, why
there was ethnic
this?
Cleansing going on. There was a lot going on. And we were mad about bombing and we were... ill-informed.
Well,
I think in some ways.
Amnesty
what I'm trying to say.
We were terrible about
hang
how
on.
We bombed. In
what I'm trying
way.
To say is that you and me, and people who grew up between like 80 and like 87, probably went through this kind of glorious time in life where like people are mad and they're doing stuff, but like we aren't in danger.
Yeah, the Berlin Wall came down.
Berlin Wall was gone. Cold War was over.
I grew up in not in an environment of fear.
We weren't in fear.
Until September 11th.
And I was 18 by then.
Yeah.
So I was born in 83. Berlin Wall came down in 91. Yeah. So I'm like, six. Right?
I had no idea what's going on.
I don't know what's going on. I don't care.
It was surreal to me.
Yeah, of course it was.
We can
you were
get
like
into
14
that.
Or something, right?
Oh, I mean, sure.
Like,
and we thought the Cold War was going to last forever.
My first surreal moment where I realized that, you know, things can get bombed and crazy people are out there was the federal building, the Timothy McVeigh.
Yeah, 94.
We had same. Like a day of school where we just stopped school and watched the news.
Yep, same.
Watching in, I believe it was fourth grade, I think.
Well, so it was 94, right? 93?
Well, the World Trade Center was bombed and the Murrow Building, I think both in 93.
Yeah, so we were 10.
That could have been sixth grade.
So no. So we were fifth grade.
Fifth grade?
Yeah. And we watched, and it was really traumatic for everybody. But it was also some guy from Oklahoma who was crazy. So, like, we didn't have the fear of outside threat. It was the sort of fear of, like...
Homegrown.
Yeah, like, there's a crazy guy. And we went through... I remember going through Waco, too.
Oh, yeah, I remember Waco.
You know, so we had homegrown... We had homegrown terrorism, but we really didn't have the idea. You know, I don't remember learning about the USS Cole. Dana
I
did.
I remember very much so.
But he was a part of the amnesty group at high school. Anyway, this
moving
is getting
on.
Way off topic. Anyway, so, gosh, getting back. Okay. So, going back to the debates, they did, and I was actually really proud of Fox News for this. That's like the fourth time that's come out of my mouth. They did a good job. They asked Kasich about the Flint water crisis in Michigan. And because he's a governor and Governor Rick Snyder has come under really heavy hail for not doing anything and not requesting anything and not responding.
And he's still screwing it up.
Yeah, I mean, he's just completely fucked the whole process. They asked Kasich sort of like, what would you have done and what would be different? And he gave a very like blah answer, but I thought that, you know, I was happy that they talked about it, at least even for 2 minutes. That he said, you know, all parts of government have to move when a crisis happens. And, you know, we work for the people, not the other way around. And we
I have to throw a butt in there.
Yeah, go ahead.
Kasich has his own lead water issue on a much smaller scale. But I think
really?
He appointed some crony in the EPA position who was not proper for the job, and they have their own, in a much smaller, I think, municipality, they have a lead issue as well.
Well, that's interesting.
So there's that.
Is that why they asked him, do you think?
Maybe, but they didn't ask him specifically. I mean, they could have said, hey, you have your own lead issue, but they didn't. So,
the lead pipe issue is not something that is regionally affected issue. People all around the country are affected by lead pipes. It's just a matter of what people expect their level of deterioration is going to be.
It's complicated.
And it becomes complicated. But, every state, probably, I would guess almost every municipality, has at least some level of lead pipes because it was not viewed as an issue.
Well, the problem is with the Flint River is that water is very corrosive.
Right.
So it's leaching off
and so
the lead.
I'm just going to stop us here. And the only reason I'm going to do that is because we're going to do an entire podcast about two issues. One of them is going to be the Flint water crisis, and we're going to get really in depth about what's going on there and like the whole history of it. But absolutely, both of you are right that most places have lead pipes. Most of them do not leach because of
filtration,
a number of things, and that the water in Flint was corrosive specifically and that stuff. But like, but at least they asked about it, which I didn't expect them to do.
No, no. Yeah, everybody's been playing dumb about it.
Yeah, and they kind of did a little bit.
Kasich was the only one that said anything, right?
Right, he was the only one asked the question, and he played dumb. You know, I don't really know what Rixner's been doing. I've only just read the recent reports, but if I were the thing, I would have acted quickly.
Yeah, it's not important. It's just 110,000 people being poisoned.
Right, and 6,000 to 10,000 children being brain dead, but you know, it's fine.
He brain did damaged, the dumb Kasich thing of what he always does, which is just like, what's important is that you react quickly and is that you use all the resources at your disposal to make sure that things happen, you know, in a timely manner, as I have done many times as being
in
Kasich.
In Iowa.
Remember me? I'm the governor of Iowa. Remember me? That's who I am. Just
Ohio.
Ohio. Oh, I'm sorry. Ohio.
Yeah, if you were the governor of Iowa, that would be...
That would be different. Okay, sorry. Ohio. Okay, then the one and only question on climate change.
Oh, right. And then Rubio lied about this, too, because I remember this because I was still in Florida at the time.
We're not brain dead yet.
No. Back then, cap and trade was something everybody was talking about, even John McCain. Now, John McCain got a lot of pushback from his oil lobby buddies and, you know, right-wing radio, so he kind of stepped it back. But at the time, guess what? Marco Rubio was for cap and trade.
Yes, which they pointed out really specifically. Like, hey, you said you were for it. And then... not so much anymore.
Well, now the whole Republican Party has to deny that climate change even exists.
Well, and he said, like, he blamed Charlie Crist. He's like, this Republican in name only, the rhino thing.
Which
he
is
was kind of
true, I guess.
Oh, completely, right?
Maybe. I mean, I don't know what Crist is. Crist just
Charlie
blows
Crist
in the wind.
Is a closeted, asshole. He's a closeted gay man who
with
was
a fake
the governor
tan.
With a fake tan. He was the governor
who's
of
Republican
Florida.
When it suits him. Who's Democrat when it suits him. Who's independent when it suits
times.
Him.
I mean, the guy's a mess.
Typical Florida.
He's a mess. Yeah. Okay? He's a mess. He's a personal, political,
and that's
and
the best they could find to run against Scott. And then Scott won again, which makes me violently nauseous.
Charlie Crist won a couple times. Like, he was the governor of Florida for a minute. And Marco Rubio did this thing, which, again, Chris Christie pointed out, like, these are sort of parlamentary tactics to get away from your vote. And
because
he said,
it makes
like,
no fucking sense.
He's like, look, I was for cap and trade, but only because our governor at the time was going to push it on us. Like, shove it down our throats, ram it down our throats, I think he kept saying.
Ram it back and
ram
forth.
Ram it back and forth, down our throats, in and out of our mouths, into our open throats, deep throating us. And we just had to find some way to make that a common.
Yeah, when he took out the cucumber as a prop, I think he was going too far at that point. demonstrated.
So I thought that was particularly interesting because it made no fucking sense. Like many things in this debate, it made no fucking sense. But this particular one, he said, you know, we brought this to the table because we needed to defend ourselves against
it.
You know, at this point in the debate, though, everybody except for, like, us and the pundits' eyes are just glazed over.
Oh, my God. My
eyes were glazed
you
over,
guys,
too.
You have no idea.
Republican voters probably just whatever. He's against climate.
I was
campaign,
for it
fine.
Because I needed to be prepared to be against it.
Later, but also if I can do it now, that's good because I'll have control. But later, but then I'll pass it. But that will be because I didn't want it to pass. And you go, I don't even know what that
I have
means.
No idea
I don't know
what
that means.
Said,
I don't
man.
Know what that means.
He doesn't know what it means. It's just a weasel answer.
And then it really.
But it doesn't matter because none of them believe in climate change anyway, except for maybe Kasich.
Well,
publicly.
Christie used to for
Jeb
a minute,
Bush
but not anymore.
Kind of like hints around like.
Or
yeah,
Christie
it's
says,
a thing,
let's not talk about climate change because ISIS is way more important.
Exactly. Well, Christie can't
talk
about it.
ISIS is causing climate change.
No. Well,
ISIS
that would
causes
be a,
everything.
That would be an interesting.
I think that happened at least once.
They fart a lot. Is that?
No, I think it was if we lose our coastal towns, then it's going to be more important that
ISIS?
Yeah.
I don't know.
All right. We're sorry.
We're all over
looking
the place.
Ahead.
So are they. Don't blame us.
No,
blame them.
I mean, honestly, like we are trying to keep this as succinct as possible. It is really difficult to summarize word salad nonsense.
Yeah.
So we're doing our best. The only reason I want to talk about immigration is because something really remarkable happened. And Fox News said, like, something you've never seen in a debate before. And we were like, who's flashing who? But they did something kind of remarkable. In the last, like, I think it's been, like, eight debates. Rubio and Cruz have gone back and forth on their immigration sort of story. Not the personal story, but like how they feel about immigration and whether they want amnesty and whether they don't, and the Gang of Eight, and all of this stuff, and
their
the wording
personal evolution of
what does the word mean. It's been really frustrating, I think, for people watching the debates, for whether you're us or even people who want to maybe support them. And so Fox News did something really interesting, and they went back and they started with Rubio, and they played a video of him.
Which I've never seen before.
Daily
never
Show style.
Yeah.
Not just a video, but like several video clips spanning multiple years. A vignette of video clips of him defending the path of citizenship for people who came here illegally. And then they asked him about the bill that he co-sponsored that would give a path to citizenship to people who are already here, and then sort of conflated that and said, like, so that's what you said for the last, you know, 4 years since 2010, so 6 years, I guess.
Why are you saying the exact
and opposite then now right that you're running for president, you're saying, I would never support that, I have never supported it, and I will never support it, and sort of what do you have to say about that? And he fights with her a little bit, Megyn Kelly, the moderator, and said, like, no, that's not what I said. And she said, like, we just watched what you said. Like, this is not one of those times when you can pivot back to what your debate prep people have told you to say. We just watched you say it.
Yeah.
We just and played she, the video.
Yeah. Like, she won't really let him get away with it. And he seems, for me, he looked visibly pissed.
He looked pissed.
Tense. Nervous, and also like, I don't know how to respond. I don't think that either campaign had any heads up that was going to be happening. So.
Right. And both Cruz have some issues with waffling and bouncing around on this.
Yes,
they
well,
do.
They did it with Cruz next.
Yeah.
Well, but we'll get to that.
Well, I think Rubio's answer was kind of like his cap and trade answer, right?
That's not
exactly what I said. And then they had to have the whole back and forth of like.
No, that is what you said. And she's reading back to him.
Just up on the fucking screen.
Yeah.
That's what you said.
She's reading back to him.
He's like, well, that's not really what I said. And eventually she had to give up and just be like, well, if you admit that reality is represented by what the video of what you said is, then
okay.
So then he pivots to ISIS.
Of course, because that's always.
Yeah.
When in doubt, bring up ISIS.
He's like, maybe that's what I said, but it's not what I meant, or maybe it is what I meant, but it doesn't matter, because ISIS is the most important thing, and border control to keep ISIS out is what I'm going to do, because I'm going to bomb everyone and make sure ISIS doesn't get in. And then he's
Hillary
like,
Hillary
Clinton's terrible. I'm going to enforce the laws, keep ISIS out, make mandatory e-verify systems, have 20,000 more border agents, and until all of that is shown to be working, there will be no path to citizenship, or amnesty allowed.
Okay,
so
which
Bush,
again, makes no sense.
Well, of course it doesn't make any fucking sense. And he didn't really respond to the allegations. So then Bush was allowed to respond to that. And he said, I'm really confused.
Okay, so are we.
Jeb, on this one, I'm with you. I'm fucking so confused. And he's like, he does support a path to citizenship. He sort of always has. And he's like, not just like voted for bills for this, but like sponsored and co-sponsored bills for this. And then all of a sudden, he doesn't want it. And then he sort of said, like, you know,
if you want an explanation, you can go to Amazon and buy
it. Well, he said, like, he ran from it, right? Well, he did say, so hold on.
He said,
like, he ran from it because it wasn't popular among conservatives and he wanted to run for president. And then he literally talked about buying his book, how it was cheap, how you can get it on Amazon. It's $2.99, the name of it. It's affordable for everyone. He spent, no joke, like 45 seconds talking about his book and how he addressed these issues.
Did he give the ICD-9
code?
How
cheap it was. I mean, no joke, he could have been like, here's the code. And if you watch this debate and you enter the code Jeb at checkout,
you get 20% off.
You get 20%. I mean, it was crazy. It was like, dude, stop fucking talking about your book right now.
I was actually really proud that in this debate, for the very first time, nobody said to vote for theirname.com.
Yeah. Ben Carson didn't say.
Vote for BenCarson.com.
Ben Carson did not say.
Do not vote for BenCarson.com.
Best website.
Do not vote for TedCruz.com.
Do not vote for JebBush.com.
Do not vote for JebBush.com.
They all...
They actually use their names as they appear on their ballot for the very first time.
100%
of them. All of these, like, what, 19 debates? This is the very first time
yes.
that no one said.
Yes, 100% of them did not do that. Okay, so then there was this sort of battle between Jeb and Marco. You used to support the path of citizenship. Well, so did you. Well, no, you did first. Well, then you
I'm
did last.
Your
and
glue.
I'm better. And did, yeah, exactly. They had this little, like, back and forth, which was, like, listening to fucking 7-year olds
listening
argue.
To your cats fight.
Who was it?
Yeah.
We're all allowed to change our minds. That was Christy, right?
That was.
No, no, it was Kasich.
No, that was Christy.
Oh, was it? Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
We are allowed to change our minds,
yeah.
but we're not bound by the consequences of us being wrong at the time.
So we're going to. Yes. So before we do that, though,
like
they did. So, but they did the same thing to Cruz. So they did the thing to Rubio where they showed the videos.
Yeah.
And then they did it to Cruz. And I think
worse.
It was even more painful
yeah.
for Cruz. I personally, I felt
well,
it.
Well, at least Cruz seemed
harder.
A little more prepared with his BS.
He did
debating
he,
skills answer, even
he
if
did.
It was bullshit.
I mean, Cruz is a prosecutor, and he has been one for many years. So I think
he's used to
more
cross examinations.
Sort of bullshit.
And, yeah.
The truth.
He is much more used to holding two different, you know, opposite opinions at the same time.
Yes.
So.
Sometimes it slips
to
out. He says them both
across.
In the same in the you know preceding
yeah,
sentences,
exactly.
but
so. Essentially, the Cruz videos, here's how it boils down. He put forward a bunch of amendments for the immigration bill back in the day. And he's on record in these videos that Megyn Kelly showed saying, I want this bill to pass with my amendments. I think it should pass. We need to find a middle ground.
And
this
it's
is
amnesty.
The best way for
it's
it
amnesty.
To go. Absolutely is.
Yeah.
Once he started running for president, he said, oh, no, I only put those bills or I'm sorry, amendments onto that bill as a poison pill. It basically means I put them there so that no one would vote for the bill so the bill would fail.
Right.
And what she was pointing out when she showed these videos
was... Which is an amazing
was,
thing to admit, even if it was true.
Yeah.
It's
right?
like I purposely don't want the business of governance. I'm just wasting everybody's time with their money, with their
yeah.
taxpayer money.
Yeah, I'm preventing this bill from passing because I'm putting these awful things into it. So that's his. That's been his stance. That's no joke. That's literally like the last 3 or 4 debates. That's how he's presented his immigration argument.
Try to squirm out of this, yeah.
And so Megyn Kelly put up, and it was like twice as many video clips as Rubio had, of him saying, "This is how we find middle ground. I want this bill to pass with my amendments. This bill finds a middle ground between Democrats and Republicans, and allows
and it's
for
immigration
a
reform.
Path to
amnesty.
Citizenship, and it allows for people that are already here, and we're not going
to,
you know, deport,
round them up and deport
12
them.
Million people." And he is clear as day. And she showed it was like a minute and a half, which doesn't seem like a long time, but on national television, when you're watching somebody say the same thing 5, 6, 7, 12 times, like, it's clear as day.
And then I think I turned to you at that point, and I was like, you see why Donald Trump is winning this debate by
yeah,
not being here?
Exactly.
None
right.
of these people in this audience want
yep.
to hear anything,
any
amnesty.
Of this. Exactly. And so they turned to Cruz after this like minute and a half, basically barrage of saying, you're a liar. This wasn't a poison pill. You wanted the bill to pass. You wanted to have a path to citizenship. Everything you said after that. And Megyn Kelly said to him specifically, so was that all an act? Because you're pretty believable with her beautiful lashes.
Yeah, I hate her.
And
I like her in some
I like her as
ways.
Much as I can like a person who interviews.
Yeah, she didn't ask about if is Santa Claus white and should he never
right.
be black.
So
but
he said,
she's my favorite person of that group anytime between
way closer
January and November. Once we get into the December territory, things start to get a little
weird with the war on Christmas.
A little weird with her, but outside of that, she's my favorite person on that channel. I mean,
well, when she's not being overtly racist.
Oh my gosh, she's a goddamn nightmare. I'm not a Megyn Kelly supporter, but like
she was good
on that.
She's a good debate moderator.
Yeah, she's a good debate moderator. Okay, so his response to this, right, watching himself say all the things that he's then denied, was that there was this bill, he didn't want it to pass, and so he proposed a number of amendments to the bill, which would fix some of the problems that he saw in the bill. And that everything wasn't perfect. And then he said, but Jeff Sessions, who, if you're not a crazy Rush Limbaugh listening asshole, is like a bad word.
Or you don't live in Alabama.
Yeah, he's an awful, awful, terrible human.
Yeah.
And then for like the 19th time brought up Steve King, who's obviously a representative from Iowa.
Who's even worse than Jeff Sessions.
He's trying to pander to, and I hate, well, he's not worse than Jeff Sessions, but he's pretty bad.
Ooh, I think he's worse.
All right, they're on par. They're on par, let's say that. That both of them have come down and said, like, yes, my immigration plan is good, and that I really wasn't trying to get, like, comprehensive immigration reform passed, and I would never have gone for a path for citizenship, and that all the amendments that I made were really amendments to try to derail the bill. And
in other words, just watch my lips right now. Ignore that Ted Cruz imposter, whatever he was saying on this video. That
right, and Chris Christie came out and said, like, hey, did y'all just watch those videos? Because
yeah.
I just watched
them.
No,
that was amazing.
Yeah.
Because that's what we were doing.
Yeah.
Right? So Chris Christie's the only person that acknowledged at all the feelings that we all were having at home. And I hope it wasn't just us three. I think anyone watching would go like, that...
Yeah. Like, we just watched the video, though. You can't be like, I didn't say that, because you're like, I just watched you say that.
And every single one of them was like, but that's misconstrued, or that's not exactly what I said.
I went on later
to say. That's exactly what you fucking said. It was on video.
I just watched you say it,
They were not prepared for the video thing. They got blindsided
by that.
No,
it was great.
Yeah,
it was great.
It was great.
And so I don't know if Fox is going to host another Republican debate. I don't think any of them want to go through this again.
Well, I hope that all debates do this from now on. Like somebody says,
I wouldn't count on it.
You flip-flopped on your record. Here are like the 14 times you said two different things on both sides.
I hate to say it. I almost wish this panel would do the Democratic debate. We would cut.
I wouldn't mind.
We would cut through
the
bullshit.
I wouldn't mind, actually. I wouldn't mind if Megyn Kelly and Chris Wallace, Brett Baer can go fuck himself, but Chris Wallace and Megyn Kelly, they should do the Democratic debate because why not? And because
they're not
going to
ask questions any less tough than they ask the Republicans.
And Rachel Maddow should do the Republican debate. Like, let's just switch it all up.
That would be amazing.
That would be amazing.
To be totally fair, yeah. I think that everyone should just get, before we even get into the primaries, everyone should just do the John Oliver debate. Where they do the vignette of, here's what you just said, here's what you said previously. John Oliver's amazing on that. John Stewart used to be amazing on that.
Every campaign manager is calling up Rince Priebus right now and saying, we are not doing another Fox debate if they
do
this shit.
I agree.
Right, well,
but,
and
I mean, like, the
to
great,
Dana's
the
point.
The greatest parts of John Oliver's stuff, John Stewart's stuff, and
is that they catch them in the
point,
act. Yeah, they use their own words
Colbert's
against them.
Old stuff. Was when somebody says, I never said that, they go like, here are the 45 times they said that.
Yeah.
Specifically the thing you said you didn't say. And there has been a petition out there to get Jon Stewart to moderate once the debates aren't primaries anymore.
Oh, my God. Oh, don't make me come in my pants.
I know. I know. It's literally, like, cum-inducing. But honestly, like, no Republican.
The Republicans
would
are not
going to
allow Jon Stewart to moderate anything.
And they also asked for...
No, it'd be beautiful. It'd be beautiful, but...
It's going to be Fox business from now on. Bye.
All right, so what else do you guys want to cover?
Can we get that guy with the big red button to do it from now on? And just, like, when people answer incorrectly.
Bozo the Clown?
Oh, my God.
No, what's
all right.
His name? The button, the buy button. And the...
Chuck Woolery?
Chuck Woolery does have those buttons. The no, the crazy guy.
All right.
From Fox Business with the fucking...
Oh,
buy,
yeah,
buy,
yeah,
buy,
yeah.
Buy,
the,
buy.
Kramer? Jim
Kramer?
Kramer? He's not
Jim
Fox
Kramer.
Business.
Jim
he's CNBC.
Can we get Jim Kramer to just do this?
How about we get
do
Jim,
a, like, the
Jim
gong
Kramer...
show when somebody says something that's factually inaccurate?
How about we get
button?
Jim Kramer shot to the moon without a return flight? How's that?
That sounds great to me.
I thought that already happened.
I wish. Oh, what's next?
All right. Gosh. I have the feeling that I want to. We're running a little.
Yeah,
well,
we got to
the Chris Christie abortion thing, right?
No, so
oh,
that's
Rand Paul.
I'm going to skip over a bunch of this. I hate Hillary and South Carolina's gonna disaster and blah blah blah.
All right,
I want
to
hit to.
Long story short, on that, everyone jumped on Hillary like a crazy person. Her name was brought up. Barack Obama's name was brought up.
Only
these,
Bernie
these
once.
Were mentioned a lot. Bernie was mentioned twice. Maybe three times.
No,
but,
twice. I only heard one.
Twice, concretely. One time was to say, like, he's worth ignoring. And another person said,
he's a socialist.
What are you going to do? Vote for a fucking socialist? Well, they didn't say
fucking,
but that was.
Yeah.
Rubio, I think, said that.
Yeah. Oh, okay.
And
so there's two things.
It was just Hillary, 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 Trump, Trump, Trump.
I gotta Obama, hit. Obama, I gotta Obama. Hit Rubio on this just for a second because this was ridiculous. Mm-hmm. He was asked about electability. And his own electability. And he said some paper, news something paper.
Endorsed him?
Said that, like 3 years ago, said he may be the future of the Republican Party, the savior, quote.
Oh, right, right, right.
Oh, there's only one.
There's only, and he literally said, there's only one Savior, and it's not me, it's Jesus Christ. And...
Oh, that...
With Jesus Christ.
Him. That's him.
That's him. With Jesus Christ, we're going to hate Obama and hate Bernie, and they want to make us Sweden, which we don't want to be, and all of us looked at each other and said... I would live in Sweden.
Sweden has a higher per capita, higher life expectancy, higher quality of life.
Higher happiness, higher everything.
Yeah. Less
and then
sunshine,
he said, what's going to happen is, this is my favorite part. I've said that like three times, but I swear to God, this is my favorite part. If Clinton is the president, the first act that she will do is to pardon herself from the email scandal because she's sacrificed our... security agents and
then Christie said he's going to put her in jail basically.
Yeah, but no, Clinton's going to pardon herself. That's literally how he thinks it works.
So I had a quick question about this.
Yeah.
I recall being in school and talking about Nixon pardoning himself as president and that not going so well.
He didn't pardon himself.
Ford pardoned him.
Yeah. So he resigned.
So I wanted to talk about this. So he initiated a campaign to pardon himself. And I wanted to know how far that went before it was shot down, before Ford had to pardon him, because he had initiated a campaign to pardon himself, but I don't remember if it got all the way to like an appeals court before the Supreme
I don't think
court
it went anywhere.
Down.
All right, let's do this. Next podcast, tail
that'll
end.
Be my, I'll
that'll
take
be,
that as an
yeah,
action item.
You figure
I want to
that
talk
out,
that.
Because that definitely didn't happen.
So,
but that's also a ridiculous thing.
I just know
thing.
That Ford pardoned him.
Yeah. All right,
Ford
so,
pardoned him officially, but he had taken on an action to pardon himself, and there was a challenge, and I want to try to...
Dana's going to tear that down, and he's going to let us know, because obviously that's not a thing that actually happens. Okay, so this was my favorite part. I keep saying that, but this was the part of the debate that we've been waiting for 8 debates, which is social issues, right? So one of the moderators said, yeah, it literally happened for about 5 minutes, but yeah. I was very happy about it. They said, you know, a large swath of Republican voters in Iowa consider themselves evangelicals, and we haven't really addressed their issues thus far.
Code word
for gays.
So
we're going to do that. So they did. The first question was to Kasich, which was a real, like, lowball, basically about, like, small government versus government spending, which I was like, how the fuck does that have to do with evangelical issues? But he basically said they were asking about expanding Medicaid because he did in Ohio.
Oh, right, because you're going to see the pearly gates. You'll want to help the poor. And
yeah, and he did. He said, like, my faith tells me that the most important thing is to help the poor and not to reduce the size of government, which I really appreciated because I think that's true. And he was talking about he really hit hard on the mentally ill, and he really said, you know, it's time for us to not allow them to live in prisons and under bridges, mm-hmm. but it's time for us to bring them into the fold and actually help them to live a functional life and to sort of help them in any way that we can, in a way that I thought was really effective. You know, again, these Rand Paul, Kasich guys.
And Bush
when,
sometimes.
Every time they make sense, I just think, well, there go your poll numbers.
Oh, they're polling at 2 and 3%. And
right,
this
and
is
now
why.
It's going to be 0.5 and 1.
Because
like,
they have some moderate, reasonable views
because,
on things.
Because we should help the people that are mentally ill. And he talked about drug-addicted people. And mm-hmm. he talked about the success in the state of Ohio with helping mentally ill people and helping people that were drug-addicted. And how it reduced crime. And it reduced, you know, assault on police officers.
Sure, of course.
And it reduced all kinds of things.
Of course.
And of course, I mean, we all know that, like, as voters of the non-crazy party, we're like, yeah, duh. But I guess I appreciated that he said that.
Sure. And he's polling at 2%, so who cares?
Yeah.
Well, I don't know. Like, it's important how these people are polling. We've mentioned many times, you know, the 2, 3, 4s are polling from the 8, 9, 10s.
Yeah.
But I think as some of these 2, 3, 4s go away, I think the timing is really super important. As to who drops out in what time, as
and
to who
they
flee to.
And,
I don't think anybody's dropping out before New Hampshire.
Oh, I don't think anyone's.
Or South Carolina.
I don't think
really.
Anyone's dropping out in the next 4 days.
No.
But
no,
after
not.
The next 4 days, if someone ends up getting like 0.06%, you know, Kasich.
Well, then who cares what happens to their voters?
Well, 0.06 it matters because there's that was their second. and their first ends up, you know, fifth out of seven. You know, these things do matter.
It does matter who support goes from the smaller candidates to the larger ones. Absolutely.
How things migrate from one campaign to the next.
Yeah, but it very rarely goes like 80 or 90% of one candidate's voters go to another candidate. It disperses.
What I will say is important to monitor.
Well, yeah. What I will say is I think it's particularly interesting in this race in Iowa because it's a caucus. We have to pick basically two candidates from the Republican. Well, we have to pick one, and then there's a second.
It's not winner take all.
It's not.
I thought they changed that.
But I think it's really going to be interesting because of the way the caucus system works, because people are trying to convince other people.
Yes.
You know, there's how many candidates are there now? Like 14?
Right. If you go to your caucus and there's four people there for Kasich, and then by the end of the night they're getting shouted down or saying join
well,
Carson.
Well, so then
or
let's say Kasich joins Carson.
Uh-huh.
And then Carson gets no. So how many of the Kasich people are going to go with the Carson people to Fiorina, or how many of the Fiorina people? It's really interesting to watch, sort of, because I think our question has been all along, because there are so many Republican candidates, if you support Trump, you support Trump. I think that everyone else who doesn't is going to go to someone else.
Correct.
And it's really interesting. It's going to be really interesting to find out who that person's going to be.
And there's a lot of people that think it all might go to Cruz, and that's what Cruz will pull the upset that way.
I disagree, and I don't know, but I think it'll be really interesting to find out.
I think Carson and Huckabee, you know, and Santorum's might.
The 2, 3, 4, 5 percenters,
right.
Who do they go to? Do those people go to the same person on the next round and the next round? And caucuses are complicated, and
yeah.
I encourage you to Google it.
And this is why I worry about how Bernie's going to do.
We're going to do an entire podcast about how caucusing works and our experience with caucusing, because we're in Colorado. But it's an entirely separate system. You don't just go in and vote for someone and then we count the votes. It's an entirely separate, really arcane bullshit kind of crazy system. So
we'll definitely let you guys know what our experience was when we do our caucus on March 5th.
Yeah, for Bernie.
And as things are happening, we'll keep you updated. But what I've liked to be telling people who don't know what a caucus is I like to relate it to that scene in Hook where Peter Pan draws a line in the sand with his sword, and one side is for Rufio and one side is for Peter Pan.
This is perfect.
And they make the argument, you know, they argue amongst one another, but like, if you think this ain't Pan the Man, and then like three people walk over to one side and now they're a majority and the other person gets to say, yeah, but Rufio has been ruling our fucking tribe.
Oh!
And then like six people walk over to the other side.
It's like that,
yeah. But you also have to divide it in the room by however many candidates there are. So on the Democratic side,
there's only three.
It's going to be relatively simple because our Martin O'Malley is probably going to be a round one cutoff, and it's just going to be that line between arguing.
But his people
back
are
going to
matter a little bit.
But when we start talking about
a little
caucuses amongst the Republican side, when this is cut nine ways,
like, I just want to
like
go.
Imagine that line in Hook.
I would love to see
like,
it.
You know, six Pans and seven Rufios.
I think some of them are going to end in fistfights, to be honest.
I mean,
no, I agree.
I want to know if we can just go, like, just drive to Iowa.
Take a road trip Monday.
Yeah, and just, like, go sit. I'm not going to do anything. I just want to watch the chaos and see how it goes. Like,
it is
what
fascinating,
arguments
isn't it?
Work, what don't.
I think MSNBC will be covering it. Yeah.
I hope so. I don't know
if media
is allowed, but I
oh,
really...
no, they're not allowed in the caucus
but
stations.
But that's where I want to be. I want to go in there. I want to see what the fuck's going on.
Probably.
I mean, I want to literally just watch it and be like, who goes where,
how many
why?
Listeners do we have? We could get a press pass.
You do that. I
who
think I'll
goes
stay
where,
here,
why? That's what
it is going to be fascinating.
I mean, I'm not going to Iowa. Khaleesi, you want to go to Iowa?
I'll go to Iowa. Fuck you guys. All right.
All right. We're going to wrap this up in rapid fire.
I think the last thing we're going to cover is the last of the social issues, because everything else was like everything you've heard before. So they talked about Kim Davis. If you remember her, she's the clerk
for a second
that would refuse to give marriage licenses to gay people.
Nobody getting lucky in Kentucky
so
with Kim Davis.
They asked Chris Christie kind of a shitty question, which was people felt that she had the religious right to not give those out, and you said the law
should
be followed.
Well, he said she needs to do her job. Yeah.
Hold on. You said the law should be followed, or she should be given a different job, and someone within that department should give the licenses out. People have objected to that greatly because they really support Kim Davis. And I didn't hate his answer on this. He said, like, look, I'm a person who was a prosecutor, and I believe the law needs to be followed. And when people come in and they want that license, it needs to be given to them. And then he pandered and he was like, now, of course, if her conscience didn't allow her to give that license, then she shouldn't have to. But if there's someone in the office where she works that could give the license that it didn't object to their moral or conscience, then they should do it instead of her doing it, which is just like a roundabout jack off way of saying, like, it's follow the fucking law.
Yeah.
And then he went to ISIS. He went to ISIS. And I thought for a second he was going to, because he's like, ISIS wants, this is what he said. This is the crazy part. Okay. Just, as a sidebar,
cut me in at the end. I
he's like, ISIS wants every person to follow not only their religious practice but their social practice based on ISIS's religious dogma. I don't want to live in a world like that. And I was so excited. I was shaking. I was like, oh, my God, he's about to call the conservative religious right ISIS, which is what they are. They're the Taliban.
Or make that connection.
And he got
connection.
So close. He was like, I don't think anybody should be required to follow a certain religious practice, a certain religious function. And I was like, oh, my God, Chris Christie, I'm going to come. And then he was like, so.
Did you realize what you just said?
Yeah. Sorry. So gross. It's so gross. I'm sorry. You're right.
Oh my God.
He was so close.
I was so close. And then
he realized what he was saying.
And then it went.
Walked it back.
So I'm going to protect the U.S. from ISIS. And I went, oh my God. I lost it.
You were going there. You felt it.
I was so close. And then you fucking. Nah.
No,
nah.
Of course he
then
can't.
Then you fucked it up.
No, it wasn't even he can't. It was like he got so close to saying it that it like dawned on him right at the last
second, he was like, oh shit,
what did I just say?
I'm comparing like, conservatives
yeah,
I'm to
comparing,
ISIS, which is
I'm
true.
I'm comparing the other people I'm running with, including myself, to ISIS.
And my supporters.
Like, and my supporters
I could see when
ISIS
he started
supporters.
Saying it how he thought, okay,
but
this
he's
makes
right.
sense.
I mean, he,
yeah. this
he,
works.
He was,
but then he's like, oh, my God, my audience. What am I saying?
Oh,
yeah,
shit.
Yeah.
He was saying,
yes, they are my opponents are the American Taliban. Oh, fuck. What did
well,
I just
he wasn't,
say?
What he wasn't going that far, but what he was saying, like, religious extremism getting in the way of the law is exactly what they do. We shouldn't do that. But
then he's like, oh, wait, we're doing that. so
shit.
We're gonna protect you.
Oh shit! I'm in
ISIS.
Iowa. For fuck's sake! I'm in Iowa talking to crazy evangelicals.
So he's like, just pivot. I'll just protect you against ISIS. Is what I meant the whole time.
Applause.
I was saying things about.
So what I was talking about was religious extremism. Woo. I meant ISIS, not the religious extremism
of
the,
my party that I was
of
just
my
talking
party
about.
That we were just talking about
abortion and things. So never mind. I just meant. ISIS is terrible. That's all I was saying.
That's
swear to God.
The question was about Kim Davis, but trust me, I'm going to protect you from ISIS.
Yeah.
That's all I'm
saying. Yeah, I wasn't talking
about.
And
I'm going to defund Planned Parenthood while I'm at it.
Yeah.
And I'm surprised you didn't take out a crucifix and start bowing at it. But.
Light things on fire and, you know, Satan's awful.
Your mother sucks cocks in hell.
Yeah, so I don't care about any of this. Okay, so Rand Paul really fucked us on this one. Yeah.
Yeah.
They said
he was doing
so
well.
I know he was like every time he came on screen, I like had this sigh of relief of like, okay, no one's
gonna
say anything terrible.
And no one's gonna vote for him, but at least he'll speak sane things.
Yeah.
And then the question was, you know, you're a pro-life candidate, which I think is actually probably not true, but he has to be if he's a Republican,
because he's running
right.
for president as a Republican.
It is this year.
Yeah, and he said, and you've said that if you were president, you would turn abortion back to the states as it was under or before Roe v. Wade.
That's
and then
not
the specific
true.
Question was, so if states, and this is the thing I'd like to talk about specifically, they said, if states decided to make abortion legal. And all three of us went, abortion
is legal.
It's already legal in every fucking
state. No, we've already jumped
state.
To Chris Wallace's hypothetical dream scenario where Roe v. Wade
where
is overturned.
The states have
if
to
the
make abortion legal.
To make abortion legal.
No, I'm sorry.
Abortion is legal.
Abortion's legal.
I'm sorry if this is getting loud, but I want everyone to hear this. Say it in unison.
Abortion
is
legal.
So, yeah, if the states decided to make abortion legal. would you support that? And my dear Rand Paul just said all the wrong things. I believe abortion is always wrong. I supported the Life at Conception Act. And then he went into this whole liberty and democracy requires a virtuous people, and a virtuous people is only gathered by religion, and we can't be virtuous without blah. Literally, my notes say...
Paul's always lost us.
My notes say religion, blah, gross.
It was gross. And it is where the Pauls always lose us.
Yep.
Yeah.
You know, even on the libertarian side, I don't hate libertarians. I think they're slightly misguided and don't see a vision for the future necessarily. I think they're a type of conservatism, and I think they think of themselves that way as well. But when they every time throw in some religious example of why libertarianism is the way it needs to go. That's when you lose me, buddy.
They're constitutional originalists when it suits them.
Well, yeah, it also is when they lose libertarians. I can tell you that I have some people in my life who are like staunch libertarians, and that's when they lose them. You know, they always make the argument. My libertarian friends come back to me and say, look, he has to say that to win the primary. We know he doesn't believe that. And I say to myself, and I say to them, like, okay, but he says it consistently. So So it's fine if you believe in your heart of hearts. And I get it. Like, I believed in my heart of hearts that Obama was not against gay marriage.
Right.
Right. And that.
And it turned out to be correct.
Yeah.
But
he evolved on the issue.
Evolved.
Hard right.
Bullshit. Bullshit.
Yeah, bullshit. I don't believe that Rand Paul thinks that the government should be inside my vagina. I don't think he believes that.
But I do believe that he does not like gays.
I don't.
Oh, no. The Pauls have a crazy gay Illuminati conspiracy theory.
They do not like the gays. They do not like the Jews. They do not like...
They love Israel. Like and they love the church.
What? Oh, just for libertarians, they are not really strictly solely for staying completely out of your business.
No. So they asked him, they followed up because he made this grand statement about this, and they said, but that wasn't really the question. The question was, do you think it's okay, even though you're against abortion, would it be okay with you if states made it legal? Again, asserting this idea that it's not already fucking legal.
Right, right.
And he said, well, I've provided a number of solutions, both on the state level and the federal level. And that, you know, the Life at Conception Act is really important. But also, if we made it back to a state issue, that would make for less abortions, because a lot of states would make abortions illegal, and that would be good, because less abortions means more life. And just this very, like, nonsensical, non-answer, bad argument about abortion, which was gross, and I really hated him for it.
He also said something that I think is, you know, a very much 100% everyone sense wisdom. That he didn't quite seem to understand that more birth control equals less abortions.
Well, none of them understand that.
None of them understand that. Yeah. No one is talking about that.
Because remember, we have to go as far, if we're on the right, we have to go as far as we don't even want contraception. We don't want sex education. We want everybody to magically abstain somehow. And then if not, you know, too bad.
Right. And I know that we've abstained from talking about the undercard kitty table.
No, we're not even going to bring it up.
I'm going to bring it up just briefly to say that it was very, very, very coherent that those people who are on the undercard side all agreed that life begins at conception. Conception meaning like sperm meets the egg.
Right. Like sperm meets my vagina? Like when you come like, in me, that's
conception?
When
you come, that's a baby.
Jesus
so,
Christ.
So no morning after pills.
No, exactly.
IUD.
It's worth noting those people are not even invited to an adult stage. And that was Mike Huckabee, Carly Fiorina, and Rick Santorum, and some guy who nobody will remember ever again.
Jim Gilmore? Okay, we gotta wrap this up.
I'm sorry, you guys. We've been rambling on. And there's been, like, there was more stuff, but really nothing of note in terms of, like, they talked about the Iran deal. They talked about, you know, Trump hating Muslims, but really nothing that you haven't heard before. So I feel like we've covered
Obama was weak.
Yeah, Obama Clinton sucks. Really, we've covered the stuff that was kind of new or interesting. But other than that, like, if you want to know how the Republicans feel about the Iran deal or about ISIS or about taxes, just go back to any of the podcasts we've done about any other fucking debate. So go ahead, Trav.
Yeah, Cliff's Notes, Barack Obama bad, Hillary Clinton more of the same.
Yeah, it was interesting, though. I just sort of the tenor and tone of it, I think they seemed a little more at ease without Trump there.
Yeah.
But I don't know if that's going to happen again. I don't know how this is going to happen going forward, because I think they're all going to scream bloody murder about the Fox moderators.
Yeah.
I mean, I don't know what's going to come of this.
They were harsh. They were not harsh. I think they claim they were harsh.
They were good at their job.
They were. And, like, I think you and I agree that, like, commending Fox News reporters ever wasn't something I thought I would ever do in my life. But really, I thought they were even better than, like, anybody else. The first and the last debates before the Iowa caucuses were Fox News, and Megyn Kelly and her team were harsher on these candidates than anyone has been before or since.
Yep.
Well, let's be fair. They were doing literally the least they could do to be news, quote-unquote news people, and quote-unquote moderators.
It was literally
the least they could do, given
the
field that
they had. There were seven other networks that did something that didn't do even that.
I think that there were other people that asked them questions and tried to do gimmicks. These people actually did the quote-unquote least they could do to be, you know, moderators and news people.
The questions were directed much more towards you said this or you said that, rather than this guy over here said something mean about you.
Respond.
So, yeah. Which was, yeah. I think, the Fox Business.
The Fox Business was the worst one. And the CNN one was goddamn dog shit.
Anyway, we're going to wrap this up now. I don't know if we're going to do another one before our Monday caucus spectacular, which we're going to try to do maybe live on YouTube as we see the results come in. If I can figure that out. If not, we'll just do a podcast afterwards.
Yeah, there's actually another thing that we're going to try to talk about, which is like a sort of a live thing where you can have multiple people talking on video, which we might do, but we'll figure it out. Either way, you guys will hear from us before that. We also have on the docket two things that are going to be a little more in-depth. One is the solitary confinement debate and how Barack Obama responded to that and what his executive action is going to be. And the other is the Flint water, Michigan crisis. We're going to talk about both of those things probably in one podcast, but we're going to get really in-depth about how that's happening, what's going forward, and sort of do a little more investigative journalism on that. So
sounds
good.
That's
coming up.
So stay tuned. Hate mail and love letters and moneygrams to irreverenttestimony @gmail.com. And we'll see you guys later. As usual, I've been Travis.
Rachel.
Vote McAfee.
Stay active, stay tuned, and stay involved.
Thanks, guys.
You say how high? Yeah. Just victims of the in-house drive-by. They say jump, you say how high?